welcoming everyone to this week's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics relating to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is going to explore concerns about inflation from climate policies. We're going to be joined by CCL's research coordinator, Dana Nucatelli, for a training that will review what research is out there about any inflationary impacts from climate policies like the carbon price or other provisions in the Build Back Better Act. Dana is going to review what resources and material are also available for you in your own outreach. And so let me introduce our fearless speaker and then pass it to him. Dana Nucatelli is an environmental scientist and climate journalist with a master's degree in physics. Dana has written about climate change since 2010. You may remember him from the Skeptical Science days. We'll put a link to that in the chat in just a little bit. He's also written for The Guardian and Yale Climate Connections. In 2015, he published a book called Climatology versus Pseudoscience and has authored 10 peer-reviewed climate studies, including a really, I would say, monumental paper in 2013 that really established that 97% consensus messaging among peer-reviewed climate science research that humans are the primary cause of global warming. Dana has since joined our staff in this past year after 9 years as a volunteer with the Sacramento chapter. And during that time, he's given dozens of presentations all throughout California and the larger country about climate change, impacts on wildfire, droughts, and policy solutions like carbon fee and dividend. So we are so grateful to have our resident expert with us tonight. I'm just going to quickly review our three learning goals and then pass it to Dana. If we've done our job well tonight, you're going to have a chance to walk away understanding a little bit more about what inflation is and what's causing it. You'll also get a window into what impact the Build Back Better Act would have on inflation, and we'll make sure to explore the impact or the anticipated impacts, rather, of a carbon fee and dividend and what that would have on inflation.
Cool. Thanks, Brett. So before I get started talking about inflation and how carbon fee and dividend and our climate policies play a role in inflation, I'm going to give a quick caveat that while I have written about climate economics, as well as science, policy, and politics for the last 10 years. I am not an economist, so I do play one on CCUs, but we're going to do our best tonight. And just to bear in mind that I'm not exactly an expert, but I do know a little bit about this stuff. So I'm going to start with the basics. What is inflation? Which is pretty simple. It's when prices go up so that our dollars don't go as far as they used to and don't buy as much stuff as they used to because of those rising prices. Oops. Which leads to another question, whether inflation is always bad, because whenever we hear about it, it seems like it's got to be a really bad thing. But it's not necessarily a bad thing, because some inflation is actually a good sign that the economy is growing. We actually tend to target growth of the economy and the prices of about 2% per year. So a little bit of inflation is fine, as long as incomes are also rising by about the same amount, so that even though prices are going up, people have more money to afford those higher prices. So kind of a key is that rising incomes, rising wages, we want to go along with rising prices at the same rate. So right now, inflation is quite high. You can see on the right side of the screen, this is a chart of, it's called the Consumer Price Index for people in cities. Now, it's basically how much the stuff we buy costs, or how much is increasing. Specifically, this is how much it's increasing year to year. And so you can see over the past year or two, the prices have kind of increased very steeply. And right now the increase, like they're actually at the highest level in about 40 years since about the early 1980s, which is right around here where I was born. So again, pretty close to like the highest they have been in my lifetime. So this is why people are very concerned about this right now. The prices are increasing very steeply, and that's hard for people to afford. And it's at a very steep rate right now. So what the heck is going on to cause that? So there's a variety of factors that can contribute to inflation. One is if people are buying more stuff. If people buying more stuff, there's higher demand. And then that leads companies and people producing the products to raise their prices because of this higher demand. And so that is one thing that's going on right now, because during the pandemic, people received a bunch of stimulus checks. We were also traveling less, buying less stuff in a lot of cases. And so we saved up a lot of money. So over the past year or two, Americans have saved up $2.4 trillion during this pandemic. And so we've got a lot of money to spend, and we're starting to spend it now. And so that is creating higher demand, which is making prices go up. So that's one factor contributing to the problem. Another one that can cause inflation is problems with supply chains. Because if you have these problems in creating products, you have a reduced supply of products, and a reduced supply also leads to higher prices as part of the supply-demand curve. So again, that's something that's happening right now with the pandemic. We had all these problems with people not being able to work, restrictions, shutdowns. So it disrupted our various supply chains and our production of products. And so again, that's a second factor. That's a really big one that has contributed to the current inflation that we're seeing. A third factor that can contribute to inflation is a reduced labor supply. Because if people are having a hard time finding enough people to hire, then they have to offer higher wages to kind of create the incentive for people to apply to those jobs. And so if you have higher wages, that's higher costs for businesses. And so they pass those costs along to consumers, which again makes prices go up. And of course, that's another thing we've been seeing with the recession. With the COVID restrictions, they trigger what people are calling the Great Resignation or the Big Quit, where a lot of people just quit jobs that they didn't find sufficiently appealing and that they felt that their wages were not sufficient to incentivize them to keep those jobs. And so a lot of people quit. And then so that has created this labor problem in a lot of sectors like services and, you know, restaurants, things like that. And then another really big factor that often contributes to inflation is changes in oil production. If there is reduced supply in oil production, then again, that causes basically energy prices, gasoline prices, things like that to go up. And if those prices are going up, again, that's a contributor to overall inflation. And same thing happened with COVID. A lot of oil production shut down because people weren't traveling. And so demand kind of cratered. And now demand is starting to go back up. And oil production hasn't been able to kind of keep up with the increase in demand. And so as a result, because the supply hasn't been enough to meet the increase in demand over the past year or so, prices of oil and other fossil fuels have really shot up. And that's been a really big contributor to the current inflation as well. So specifically what's happened over the past year or two, roughly speaking, half of the inflation that we're seeing has been due to higher energy prices and car prices. Another thing that's going on is computer chips for cars, like the production hasn't been able to keep up with the demand. And so they basically that has caused problems with the supply chain for cars. So that's the two big contributors. The other half has been due to various COVID supply problems, food, housing, furnishings, appliances, and other goods. There just hasn't been enough supply keeping up with demand. And so these supply chain problems have been a second really big contributor. Another contributing factor is that businesses are also pocketing record profits recently. This is something that President Biden has spoken out about recently. So there was a recent survey of a bunch of companies, and more than half of them said that they have been raising prices beyond what their increased input costs due to various supply chain COVID problems have been. So you can see this chart on the right. This is a corporate profit margin, and you can see it's over the past 7 years or so. We're seeing this really big year or two of profit margins. Again, you know, I was born right here, so it's actually corporate profit margins are the highest that they have been in my entire lifetime. Actually, the highest they've been since like 1950, so they're probably the highest that they have been in many of our lifetimes. So over the past year, inflation has gone up by 6 or 7%. Corporate profits have gone up by 37% over that same period. Wages have also gone up by a good amount. So that's helped people who have been in positions where their wages have gone up. It's helped them kind of afford inflation, but people whose wages haven't gone up have been seeing really difficult problems with prices increasing, and they don't have the commensurate increase in wages to afford it. So some people are doing okay, some people are not. And overall, corporations are doing quite well. So as I mentioned, fossil fuels have been a really big contributor to the current inflation. So this is a table of some of the factors that go into the consumer price index that I mentioned, the stuff that we buy. So you can see right here, this is the change over the past year, the percent change in costs in these few sectors that I included in this table. So you can see right here, food, the price of food has gone up by about 6% over the past year. The average of all the items that they include in this consumer price index has increased by 7% over the past year. But a couple factors that have gone way up are gasoline. Prices have gone up by almost 50%. And natural gas service to buildings has the prices gone up by almost 25%, 24%. So, you know, that is much, much larger than this, like 6 or 7% of most other stuff. So that's why you can see that, you know, these fossil fuels have been a really big contributor because their costs, their prices have gone up much, much more than the prices of products in other sectors, in most other sectors. I also want to highlight electricity here, which has gone up by about the same amount as food, about 6%, even though quite a bit of electricity is supplied by fossil fuels, natural gas, and coal. So basically, that's a useful thing to know, because while these fossil fuel costs are going up, electricity has its prices have remained pretty stable. And so that's kind of an important point that I think is useful for us to make, which I'm going to make in a few charts here. So this first chart, what I'm showing is the change in the price of various energy-related products compared to their average over the past 20 years from 2000-2021. So this first one is electricity. So you can see electricity prices in the United States are quite stable. They don't change very much over time. They don't have these really big spikes. They're very stable, plus or minus maybe 10%. In average electricity prices in the United States. And you don't see a very big spike right here during the COVID pandemic at the end. So yeah, it's very nice. Electricity prices don't change very much. On the other hand, this black line is natural gas prices over the past 20 or so years. So you can see natural gas prices, there are all kinds of spikes where they are deviating very much from their average. So kind of like they spike up and then come back down, and they spike down, and they spike up. And they're kind of all over the place, very volatile, very unreliable. You can see right here is the very large spike that we've seen over the past year or two in natural gas prices that are contributing to some really big inflation problems. And then, of course, one that everybody really hates is gasoline prices are very similar to natural gas prices, and they kind of spike all over the place. So you can see like very high spikes kind of in the 2008 time. You can see right here, this is the spike over the past year or two in gasoline prices. It's been very much higher than it has been in recent years. And so that is contributing to inflation, because a lot of products, shipping depends on these fossil fuels. People just buy gasoline for their own transportation needs. They have natural gas for their home heating or for, you know, their stoves and things like that. And so unfortunately, we still use a lot of fossil fuels. And so when fossil fuel prices spike, as you can see, they often do, that is a significant contributor to inflation or deflation, depending on which direction it's going in. So a kind of a key lesson to take home from this is that if we were able to switch, for example, from natural gas burning heating or stoves to, for example, electric heat pumps or electric induction stoves, then that would make the relative price that people are paying become very much more stable. Or if we switched from gasoline powered cars to electric cars, then all of a sudden everything is being fueled by these very stable electricity prices instead of these very, very volatile fossil fuel prices. So in the long run, transitioning away from fossil fuels towards electricity is a good way to guard against these inflation spikes. And the CCL marketing team put together this very nice graphic with some data about renewable energy prices versus gasoline prices that makes the same point, but theirs looks kind of a lot prettier than mine because they're very good at this kind of thing. So on the left, you can kind of see, you know, the costs of solar and wind power just kind of go down and down and down. and, you know, kind of makes you feel good that your prices are going down with the electricity that you're buying from wind turbines and solar panels. Whereas on the right side, you can see these very volatile gasoline prices spiking up and down can create a lot of stress and cause these inflationary problems. So ideally, we are trying to transition away from fossil fuels to address some of these long-term inflationary pressures. So why this all matters right now is everybody's best friend, Senator Joe Manchin, who has said he will not support the Build Back Better package without, if it risks hurting American families who are suffering from historic inflation. He said that a few months ago, and then just recently, he kind of repeated this same concern. He said, when talking about the Build Back Better package, he said the main thing we need to do right now is to take care of the inflation. So he is very concerned about inflation, as many people are, as his constituents are. So then the question is, you know, okay, what can we do to address inflation? And one of the things we can do to address inflation in the long term is transition away from volatile fossil fuels, which is one big thing that we're trying to do with the Build Back Better package. It has, you know, these tax credits for clean technologies, electric cars, which again, are run on a much more stable fuel source. It's got, you know, incentives for people to get heat pumps and things like that, electric heat pumps. So it's got these investments that will transition us away from these fossil fuels that contribute to inflationary spikes. And so hopefully, even though Senator Manchin has some vested interest in some fossil fuels, hopefully some people can help explain this to him, that this would help with long-term inflationary concerns if we were to pass these measures. As for the Build Back Better package in general, some key experts have weighed in on its potential impacts on inflation. So there's this article, I believe it was in Reuters, that they talked to some ratings agencies who said that, as the headline says here, the Build Back Better plan will not add to inflationary pressure. Specifically, they noted that it will be spread over a relatively long time horizon because for the most part, especially the climate provisions are spent over a 10-year window. And in fact, Senator Manchin kind of nixed anything that has kind of a shorter term sunset. And so kind of everything that's going to get passed in this Build Back Better package is going to be spent over a long period of time and spread out. And so in that sense, it won't have big investments that will trigger further inflation in the short term. And additionally, it's got the experts from these ratings agencies noted that it's got these policies that will help lift long-term economic growth via stronger productivity and labor force growth and thus take the edge off inflation. The idea being that it kind of does investments in things like childcare and pre-K education that will help parents kind of lift that burden of having to constantly take care of their kids all day long, because they will then be in childcare and in school. And then the parents will then be more available to enter the labor force or be in the labor force more often, which will then help ease some of the labor supply issues that have contributed to some of the current inflation. There was 17 Nobel Prize winning economists who said something very, very similar. They wrote this open letter a few months ago in support of Build Back Better. Again, they said it invests in long-term economic capacity and will enhance the ability of more Americans to participate productively in the economy, again, by lifting these strains from childcare, for example, and thus they actually considered over the long term, it will ease longer-term inflationary pressures. And so this is something, again, President Biden has been emphasizing, that all these experts have said that the policies in at least the previous Build Back Better package that passed the House would, over the long term, take steps and take measures that would actually ease inflation. Short-term inflation is a tricky problem because, you know, it's things like supply chains and, you know, oil production and things like that having to kind of ramp back up, which there's not much that the government can do about that. You know, the government is taking steps to address the inflationary pressures that it can, but they're in the short term. There are a lot of inflationary pressures that they don't have control over, but there are some of these pressures that in the long term we do have control over, like childcare issues and like fossil fuel reliance. So Senator Tim Kaine from Virginia, he kind of understands all this. He recently said that the core is education and workforce and reduce childcare and education expenses, workforce training, things like that, because those will, again, help deal directly with some of these inflation concerns, kind of echoing what those economists said, that if you help people ease their burdens with and related to childcare, then again, they can get back into the labor markets and help meet some of these labor shortages, which will help in, over the long term ease some of those inflation concerns. So that's just a general Build Back Better package. So what's about specifically carbon fee and dividend, which we hope makes it into the bill, but is still up in the air. So if we're trying to make the case for carbon fee and dividend and there are concerns about inflation, what can we say about it? So what we know is that economic models have addressed this question, looking into the inflationary impact that carbon pricing would have. And in theory, it would have some inflationary effect because that's the whole point of a carbon price, is to make fossil fuels pay their entire cost, including their costs of pollution, which then makes the costs of fossil fuels rise. But it turns out they don't rise too much. So for example, the Columbia Center on Global Energy Policy modeled the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act for us. And we asked them, can you look at what impact it would have on inflation? And they said over 10 years, you're looking at about 2.4 points increase in inflation. So that's basically 0.25% per year or so, which is, you know, a little bit of an inflationary effect, but not a big one. As I mentioned earlier on, we actually aim for 2% economic growth per year and 2% inflation per year. And so 0.24% is not a huge contributor to that. Goldman Sachs recently did something similar where they looked at the inflationary impact of a $100 per ton carbon price, and they came to basically the same conclusion. It would add about 0.25 point per year to inflation over the first 3 years. So basically models say a carbon price would have a small impact on increasing inflation because of these increases in fossil fuel costs. But there was also just last year, a few months ago, a study of real-world carbon pricing systems that looked at their inflationary effect. And you can see this is kind of the title of the paper over here. And what they found was that in the real world, carbon pricing systems actually haven't contributed to inflation. Basically, what seems to happen is that while fossil fuel costs, energy costs, gasoline costs do go up a little bit, at the same time, while that's happening, households tend to spend less on other products, especially high-income households, which is interesting. So what they found was the decreased purchasing of other products basically offsets the increased costs associated with fossil fuels. And so those kind of offset each other, and there's really not any significant, or at least in carbon pricing systems that have been implemented around the world so far, there hasn't been any increase in inflation. If anything, has actually been the opposite effect, a very slight deflationary impact on real world economies, but it's been pretty insignificant either way. And then another key point that we really like to make is that this is precisely why we pair dividends with a carbon price, that we know if we put a price on carbon, it's going to cause household energy costs to increase. And this is a nice chart from our household impact study, looking by income bracket from the low, from the lowest income 20% to the highest income 20% of households, that you can see the blue bars are basically the direct energy costs associated with a price on carbon. And then the green number here is the amount that households are getting from carbon dividends. And so, yes, there is this kind of inflationary effect of people's energy costs going up, which is not great. But as I mentioned at the beginning, as long as incomes go up as much or more than inflation costs are going up, it's not a problem. And that's exactly why we have the dividend. So that's the way I can see low and middle income households, the dividend is larger than their increase in energy costs. So while they have this inflationary effect of higher prices, they also have a commensurate increase in effectively income from the dividends. And so that's not a problem. If you have more money to spend and prices go up, and if the more money to spend covers that increase in prices or more, then it's fine, it's not a problem. So that is precisely why we do dividends, especially for lower income households, so that they don't have this negative economic effect. So to summarize, there are a bunch of different factors, mostly related to the coronavirus pandemic and associated shutdowns and restrictions that have contributed to the current inflation. provisions in the Build Back Better package, at least the version that we were looking at last year. We'll have to see what makes it into the version that they negotiate this year. But last year's version, provisions would have helped to alleviate some of the inflationary problems related to labor supply, again, by helping parents get back into the labor force. We also have just saw that carbon pricing would have a minimal effect on either inflation or deflation. Either way, it's a very small effect in the real world and in models. And that's, again, the reason we do dividends is to offset any inflationary impacts that households see due to higher fossil fuel prices causing higher energy prices. And then finally, really key points is that policies like a carbon fee and dividend or any other climate policies that shift energy sources away from fossil fuels and their volatile prices towards electricity, which is a lower carbon source and also a much more stable pricing source, that shift will guard us against future inflation spikes because, again, the current inflation, a very, very big contributor, has been rising fossil fuel costs.
Let's start by just thanking you, Dana, and the whole research team for putting together this really comprehensive and in-depth summary of really what we're looking at. And I know all of us on the line tonight are really grateful for that work. And I would love to just thank everyone so much for obviously joining us tonight. I will put a link in the chat again where you can find the recording one last time. And Dana has generously made his own Twitter handle and email available here too. So if people have any questions following up from tonight's training, you are more than welcome to reach out to Dana. But with that, stay safe, have a wonderful rest of your week, and we look forward to hearing what you are up to with your CCL chapter on this topic after tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Dana. Guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.